Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. I'm so excited about this show. It's all about healing our bodies through our minds, using our minds. And to help us do it is a psychoanalyst who has written a number of books. He's a very prominent guy. I knew his name even before I got his book. And it's Dr. Henry Grayson. Henry, welcome to the show. Hello.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you now. Welcome.
Okay.
Thanks for joining us.
Good to be with you.
Now, this book is an incredible tool because you not only are intelligent and give us great insight, but you actually offer so many vehicles to help ourselves, and I'm thrilled about that because it's so meaty. I look at different pages and I go, oh yeah, that'll help. Oh yeah, and that'll help. Oh yeah, and that'll help. So it's the kind of book that everybody should be working with regularly.
Well, I'll have to say it's something I've used with myself for many, many years. And that's something I work with other people to use, not only with me, but to begin to use on themselves as well. Because I think that too often in my field, you know, of psychology and psychotherapy, that we kind of expect people just come in and do whatever work with us, but they don't have tools to take with them. And I think of it as much like if you're trying to build a house and you don't have tools, you're not going to do a very good job with it. And I think we need tools to manifest even our psychological and our spiritual and our healing practices. We need tools to help us carry those out.
Well, and that's for all these patterns that you talk about, for instance, tribal patterns and our negative belief systems that are embedded in us. And, you know, maybe it could take years of therapy to help. And isn't that nice? And maybe even all those years don't help. So what gets us past those?
Well, that's one reason I think I've entitled the book the way I did, Use Your Body to Heal Your Mind. Because what I mean by that is if we can use the signals in our bodies, especially the little ones, before they get to be big ones, but use the big ones too if that's the first time we get it, but to use that as language to take us to what's going on in our minds. And if we can get to what's going on in our minds, then that in turn brings the truer healing to our bodies.
Right. So you can reverse your title. Use your body to heal your mind and use your mind to heal your body.
Well, I almost added this as the subtitle, and I decided, no, it's too much to put in the title. But I almost put in, use your body to heal your mind that needed the body to be sick.
That's true. And people don't realize that.
No, we think so much that our illnesses come from some linear thing and that the cure comes from some linear thing. That's a part of the old Newtonian worldview of 350 years ago of Isaac Newton, where the only thing that's real is what you can see and experience with the five senses and measure it. Whereas the quantum worldview or the current or the ancient spiritual worldview, which is similar to the quantum physics worldview, is that there's just dancing energy and information. That's all that's here. Well, and therefore it's affected by consciousness, and consciousness is really what rules.
The field of medicine has not caught up with that.
No, it's only a few things, like a CAT scan or a PET scan. It's not linear. It just gets vibrational energy and translates it into an image. But most of the medicine thinking does not include that way of thinking. It sees it as a body part that needs to be fixed like a body part in an automobile.
Right, and a lot of people's complaints, if they can't find it in the body, they say it's their imagination.
Yeah, and just make it up as something to pass off rather than saying, it's language coming from your body. Let's listen to it and translate it.
That's
Let's
perfect.
See what it's really saying. What right. message is it giving me? And then I can get in touch with that, and I can maybe stay well or not get sick or get well if I'm already sick.
Right, and there are many schools out there now that are starting to relate our body parts and our body breakdowns to different psychological patterns.
Right. Right. That is happening.
Yeah, and so you're the healer of that. And you've taken it out of strictly out of the mind and have translated those two, the mind and the body, into active techniques that help us understand ourselves. I like the way your book starts off, where you were at a conference and you were muscle testing people and asking them very obvious questions about whether they really deserved or were worthy of being happy and healthy. And what happened to those people?
Well, the important thing was from that, it was kind of an impromptu thing I did, first of all in Boston, then I repeated it in South Carolina, North Carolina, and I repeated it in New York and Chicago and San Francisco and San Antonio, Texas, all, you know, different regions. But it started in Boston, and I thought with the people there, they might just have, I thought I would check and see if they deserve to be healthy and happy or if it's safe. Because I started by saying, how many people here totally want to be, have total health and happiness? And everybody's hand went up, and with enthusiastic response. And then I asked their permission to do the muscle testing, because your arm goes strong if you know a statement to be true from your inner wisdom and inner knowingness, and your arm goes weak if you know it to be false. So I thought, that's a quick way to ascertain if we're deceiving ourselves. And let's just see what it would be. And so I went around and quickly tested everybody, and to my surprise, I thought it would be maybe a third of the people that had one of these two barriers of not deserving and not being safe. And what astonished me is that 82% of the audience had both, and the other 18% had one or the other. Then I repeated this around the country in all the cities I mentioned, and I got the same results there, just varying 1 or 2 points each way.
Now, why did they test so poorly?
I think it's because we all have hidden barriers. Part of our subconscious mind, which is 95% of what we think and do. The research shows that we're only about 5% conscious, and 95% of our behaviors are unconscious. Now, that's the bad news and good news. The good news is, if you're a 16-year-old driver and you're just starting to drive a car and one pulls out in front of you, you're probably going to have an accident because you're thinking so carefully about everything you've got to do. Whereas an experienced driver would just know, snap into action, and just find himself doing whatever needs to take and avoids the accident. That's the unconscious mind. That's the good part. On the negative side, we also take in all the traumas that we experienced as little kids, all the painful experiences of rejection and criticism and judgment and hurt and abandonment and neglect and the whole works, you name it. And then we also take in downloads from our parents. We literally take in their patterns of ways of thinking, their patterns of dealing with illness, their patterns of dealing with the world, their patterns of handling stress. We just download it, and it becomes a part of our operating system. So we bring all that stuff with us. And that stuff causes us to have beliefs about ourselves, about life, about whether we're worthy or not, safe or not, whether I have to be perfect all the time, or whether, you know, I'm sufficient to do something, or I'm no good, or all these things that we carry about ourselves, and we play them out. And then all these are constantly affecting every cell in our bodies, moment by moment by moment.
So we all have our own little cesspools inside of us.
Everybody has it. There's no human being that doesn't have it. And so we need to think of it not as psychopathology, not like these things that they're printing out the diagnostic and statistical manuals. No, that's just to sell drugs, so you know how to prescribe a drug for it, which only deals with a symptom anyway and causes 2 or 3 more illnesses. But instead, we need to get to what is the origin of what's really going on, and this is what we need to do. And we can get to the origin of what's there, then we can do something different. We can understand how to deal with that problem differently. I mean, I think of like about 25 years ago, I had such a severely degenerated disc in my back, which I'd had increasing problems with. It would almost incapacitate me. I could barely walk around sometimes for days with just barely moving. And I would sometimes, with my patients, I would lie on my couch and let them sit in a chair. That was that bad. And it got to the place that it was so bad, the doctor said, with the x-rays, it's so severely degenerated, you probably won't walk again unless we do back surgery. And I thought, well, I certainly want to walk again, but at the same time, the statistics show that 68% of the time you were worse off after back surgery. I thought, I don't like those odds. 2/3 of the way, I'm likely to be worse. So I said, no, I don't want to do that. So I started asking myself a series of questions that I'd learned to do back when I was in graduate school, when I used to get sore throats and colds. And the first time I dealt with that, I asked myself these questions, and I dealt with the answer, and then I stopped getting them ever again. I haven't had them for decades now, sore throats and colds. And I used to get four or five every winter, three or four or five.
Now those are six easy questions. They're in your book.
Yeah, and then I started to ask myself those questions about this back thing. And I said, why might I need this? And why might I need it now? What would it get for me? What would it get me out of doing? Is there some metaphor being expressed in this illness, this symptom? Is there some emotion that's being expressed in it? And I've added one sense that time. Is there some tribal or family belief or cultural belief that's being expressed through it? And so I asked myself those questions when I was lying there, unable to move a centimeter in the bed without being feeling like I was being jabbed with an ice pick and then shocked with electrodes. And I asked myself those questions, and I came up with several answers. A couple of people I needed to deal with differently, somebody I'd felt betrayed by. I needed to change my lifestyle. I'd done sports and never stretched, and I'd never done anything to deal with stress. So I realized I needed to start a practice of meditation or breathing. And so I made a commitment, firm commitment I knew I would keep to doing all those things and to deal with those people directly. And I'd sit down and talk with them as soon as I could be mobile again to do it. And I knew I'd keep it. And I started to get better. And the key part was 2 months later, I was skiing in Colorado.
That's
great.
And
I was pain-free for years afterward. And then about 6 or 8 years ago, I had an annual physical exam where, when I have those occasionally, I go into the doctor. My purpose is not to find out what's wrong, but I'm going in to prove how healthy I am. I prefer that approach. Anyway, I went in, and he convinced me I had to take, he hadn't taken a picture of my lungs for a decade or more. He finally convinced me, even though I didn't want to do it, and I let him take it. Now I'm glad I did, because he came back saying, Henry, your lungs are fine. I said, I know. And he says, but you won't believe this. He says, it's not supposed to happen. That disc of yours is regenerated. It can't be. But yet I see it here on the x-ray. And he was just kind of, his hands were kind of trembling as he was saying that. And I was able to say, yeah, I'm happy to hear that. I believe it. And I do. And it was true. And so what that said to me, it confirmed for me what I learned in other ways through my life, that it's the mind that rules. It's consciousness that rules. It's not matter that rules over consciousness. It's consciousness that rules over matter.
But then it's a journey for most of us, or all of us, yes. I guess, of discovering these inner beliefs, these negative understandings that we have about life, about what we deserve or what we lack.
Yes.
And then we have to find those.
Right. We have to be curious and relentlessly curious and keep searching for what it might be. You know, it can be very simple sometimes. Like once I remember when my youngest son was about 3 years old, I'd been very busy that fall and doing a lot of traveling and put on a conference pretty much single-handedly on top of my practice and so on. And it was Christmas morning, and I was sitting there on the floor with him opening presents and having fun, and I started to get a little twinge in my back, and I started to get a little sore throat. And I said, whoops, something's going on here. What do I need to attend to? And I told my wife, I said, what was happening? I said, would you take over here and excuse me for a few minutes? I want to go meditate and reflect on this because I don't want to get sick. Let me see if I can see what's going on. And I went into a meditative state, and I kept asking myself why I might need those symptoms. And all I could get was, I need rest. I need rest. And I thought, simple as that? And I thought, I couldn't come up with anything else. And I came back out, and I said to her, you know, she said, what did you come up with? I said, all I could get was, I just need rest. She says, well, you going to take tomorrow off then? And I said, and that startled me. And I said, whoa, wait a minute. I never cancel my patients. I've never done that. I just don't cancel them. I'm always there. She said, would you prefer to get sick then? And I thought, you're right on track. That's exactly what it's about. And that's my choice.
I had an interesting revelation not long ago. I was standing at the bank teller window and started to feel my back go out on me.
Uh-huh. That's a good place for it to happen.
Right.
You were loaded down with so much money,
That's right. It was too much to carry.
You had so much money to carry in there. It just broke your back.
Right. But it was a clear signal to me that, a back problem can easily be based on those kinds of issues.
Yeah, some kind of thoughts about money, some kind of fears about money, some kind of burden about managing money, some kind, whatever it might be.
Exactly.
And I know when I said to her about that, I said, okay, when they get, tonight, I'm not going to call them this morning, on Christmas morning, but tonight I'll call them and I'll cancel. You know, within 15 minutes, the symptoms were all gone and didn't come back because I made a different choice.
Now, there are a lot of other ways of solving a problem.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what's so fascinating about your book. It's, these are, you're giving a very easy example, but so many people are have much more complex issues, and taking a day off is not the answer.
But exactly. That's a simple one.
Yeah, and
beginning
but,
level.
But your book really covers the gamut, and you have so many beautiful techniques and techniques that actually allow us to work with our bodies, to rub different places and say different things to ourselves in order to heal. And you even came up with your own system based on EFT. And it's nice to see that. You call it EFTA.
Mm-hmm.
And it's using the, 'cause EFT, people don't know, most people don't know what EFT is, but it's working with particular acupuncture points that you,
right.
generally you tap or you can rub.
Mm-hmm.
And they help shift energy in our bodies. And it's a very powerful technique, and there are a lot of people who are using it in many different ways, and
yes.
you're a psychoanalyst, so you have figured out how to actually to use it, making, let's call them, psychological statements.
Well, I learned from both systems, that as well as from the system of acupuncture, because in acupuncture, they say that you have meridians of energy that run through the body. We used to think they were metaphors, and now you can photograph them, so we know they're really there. But those different energy systems run to connect with different organs. And each organ, according to that ancient Chinese system, is connected with a set of negative emotions and the opposite positive emotions. So if you stimulate the negative ones, you reduce them, and you then allow the positive to come into place. So combining with my analytic background, I thought, well, one thing that there's a lot I disagree with about Sigmund Freud, but there were several important things that I think were brilliant on his part, was the recognition of the unconscious mind, and now we know that 95% of our behaviors are unconscious, so it's even more than he thought. And also he talked about tried to work with symptoms when he was younger, and he tried hypnosis, and he'd relieve a symptom, he'd find it pop up somewhere else. So what he recognized is that there's a connection between what goes on in the mind and in the body. But if you don't get to the bottom cause, it's not going to take care of it. And he kept trying to find methods that would work, like free association and dream analysis and things like that, but found that they didn't really work. In fact, he concluded that the most you can expect from a successful psychoanalysis is to be relieved of some of the worst of your human suffering. So I thought, gee, when I was in analytic training, I thought, we got to go beyond that. And that's when I started to study every possible other method I could find, thinking I'm open to it. As long as it's legal, ethical, and has no harmful side effects, I want to know what it is, if it can help people out of their suffering. And so that's when I came across these other methods where you use consciousness to manipulate the energy systems in the body and find that you could get amazing results. But particularly, I think, in the area where he talked about trauma starting everything off. But even having the tools that work to clear out effects of traumas, for the most part. Now we do. And we can use bilateral stimulation of the brain as one more commonly known, EMDR. Or I find them even more effective is the one where you touch or tap on the energy meridians in the body. And I find it even more effective and more stabilizing, whereas the other can overwhelm people sometimes with emotion.
Well, not only that, but you use very life-enhancing statements. And also acceptance of ourselves.
That's a key part, isn't it?
Yes, we have to see. Part of it is willing to go into that cesspool and see what's there, and understand those unconscious patterns that we're living with, and for that to be okay, in the sense that I'm finding these because I'm approaching them from a positive place of wanting to do better in life.
It's because I want to be happy and healthy and joyous and loving and feel my inner power rather than feeling powerless and weak and at the effect of and resentful and angry and all that sort of stuff.
Right. So many people are afraid to go there, to go into that cesspool and find what is really making them dysfunctional.
If they could realize what they do in the Chinese system of acupuncture, is if you stimulate that meridian of the negative emotion, it can naturally transform to the positive one.
Now, by stimulating a negative emotion, what are you actually doing? We don't want to scare people about that.
All I'm doing, actually, is if you have a person just place their fingers on the eyebrow next to the nose, and just that's the acupressure point that has to do with the emotion of fear. And so I just simply have the person focus on their trauma or their negative belief or the negative emotion, and then to say, I now release all fear related to this trauma.
And that's
take a slow, deep breath.
And that's connected to the bladder.
And that's right. And then you go around the outside edge of the eye, and I release anger, resentment, and rage, or under the eye is anxiety, or under the bottom lip is down to shame and guilt, and so on. And so if you touch those diverse negative emotions, ones that people thought they did not have will often just suddenly appear to them, but because they're breathing and they're stimulating the energy meridian, it becomes very manageable for them to deal with it. They don't get overwhelmed by it, but it also brings it to the surface so it can be released. That's the beauty that I like about it.
I was just thinking of something with that front of the chin. That's a conception vessel. And that comes from the groin, and that has to do with shame and guilt.
Yes,
and men, shame is a bigger issue with men than women.
Mm.
And at least we find that in the roles we play in life, that
yes.
men need to be the provider, and anything that shows doubt about their abilities creates shame.
Yes,
and that's why men have trouble expressing themselves around it, because they would rather either fight or fly from that sense of shame. So I'm fascinated that this energy that comes from the groin goes up to the chin, and you hold that and release your shame and guilt. Is it makes sense?
Well, I'm thinking too, just interesting how that maybe originated, because male structure, the genitals hang out visibly, and with females, it's internal and invisible.
Right.
And so,
right.
Obviously, in whatever systems got going in the world, it was easier to have shame attached to these visible things.
Sure. That makes so much sense. That's great. Thanks.
And that was built in culturally, then we build it in and put programming into the body.
Right, and so we can actually shift our patterns. I call it re-scripting.
Mm.
We're re-scripting ourselves to take that subconscious mind and straighten it out a bit.
Yes, exactly it. Because if we program our subconscious mind. Like all the personality theories say that we form our personalities before school age, like age 5 or 6. And yet, how many of us remember very much from those years? I mean, I remember 4 or 5 things prior to school. And how many do you remember? Not many, right?
Well, right. I mean, mostly the shameful ones.
Uh-huh. And if we don't remember but 4 or 5 or 6 things from preschool years, we don't remember how we wrote our operating system for our lives. And we wonder why we feel and think and act the way we do. And how could we? Because it's a time we don't remember. And yet those are the times that formed our patterns and we wrote our operating system. And now the good news is that we can use some of these methods to access what was encoded back there and has started our predisposition toward these problems or these symptoms or whatever they might be. And we can clear that because it's just encoded information.
Right.
And we can clear it and therefore free up the energy for health and happiness.
And not only can we, but reading your book, you will be able to do this by really addressing all of these different lists that you have and processes that you offer for people to actually attack it.
And well, it helps us identify them, so we can.
Yeah, well, not only identify, but then you give the processes that, that can actually shift these.
Well, one thing I might add, too, is that when I wrote the book, I thought, people won't get it just from reading about it. I'm going to have to demonstrate it. So let me put a DVD in the back demonstrating these things. And then after talking with publishers about it, and they say, oh, that just makes it more complicated. The book will have to sell for a lot more, which means
right.
fewer people will read it then.
Yeah. Send them
have,
to your website.
To package it in the back yeah. of the book. And so my administrative assistant came up with a brilliant idea. I said, why don't we just put these on your website?
Yeah.
People can read about it in the book. They can go to your website and watch these, and they can follow along with it
right.
as if they're following with you.
Nowadays, it's easy to do that. And so mm-hmm. So where is your website?
It's just henrygrayson.com.
G-R-A-Y-S-O-N.
.com. Just henrygrayson.com.
Right.
And they can go there and they can download any of those tools once, and just use it to help themselves do the clearings of their traumas, their negative beliefs, their negative thought patterns, their negative images, whatever it might be, that are setting themselves up for the mind-body difficulties and pains and suffering.
Right. And even, well, I'm sure it's on the web, but there are other techniques that you have in your book. For instance, I like the idea of dialoguing with your organs and glands.
Mm. Now, that's a real good one, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's very simple. Just to, if I'm having a problem in my knee, for example, I can have a dialogue with it and say, you know, yeah, what are you saying? What are you here for? And then let my knee borrow my mouth to speak through it and answer back.
Right.
You know, I've been feeling kind of burdened down lately. I've been carrying too much load over here, you know, or back and forth it might go. And if you go back for 5 minutes of a dialogue, and often it can bring to the surface, wow, I never thought that might be what's expressed in my knee or in my back or in my stomach or wherever it might be.
And you might even ask your knee, which acupuncture point can you go to clear it with those statements?
That'd be a good one, too. Yeah. Great idea.
What fun.
Yeah, keep letting it evolve.
Right.
All these different dimensions.
And then you address our mindfulness and our need to stick with it.
Exactly. And, because if we clear out all of our traumas, painful experiences, abandonment, neglect, abuse, criticisms, judgments, pressures, you name it, if we clear all that out, that's very important. And then out of that grows belief systems that we've concluded. If we don't attend to those, we can actually reactivate those traumas. So we need to clear out those negative beliefs, too. But then that's not sufficient by itself ongoingly. Because if I clear my traumas, I clear my negative beliefs. But if I allow my thoughts just to go helter-skelter with every kind of negative thing, remembering the past pains and projecting them into the future and condemning myself and being critical of myself and using judgments about myself and others and on, fall into worry and worry thoughts and fear thoughts, what will I do? I'll reactivate those traumas. I'll reactivate those beliefs.
And then people need to go back to this book, Use Your Body to Heal Your Mind. And so this is a book, because we're almost done with the show, this is a book that I think people should not only buy, but refer to again and again and again mindfully to stay in tune with their negative patterns and keep on clearing them.
Exactly. We need to keep doing it, and I will be using all of these the rest of my life. Because I prefer to be healthy, and I prefer to be happy.
Well, you're a great inspiration, and I'm so happy that you're smart and wise enough to not only know all these things, but to put it into a form that we can all use it. And I want to thank you so much for the contribution you're making to all of us.
Well, that's the whole purpose of writing it, is so people can benefit from it.
Right. Well, it's wonderful, and I really appreciate you being a guest on Energy Stew.
Well, I'm delighted to be with you, and I enjoyed the dialogue with you.
Dr. Henry Grayson at henrygrayson.com. And thank you. It's been so much fun talking with you.
Good being with you.
Thank you. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at Progressive Radio Network. And I can be reached at Peter at Heart River, heartriver.org, or 212-222-7748. Lots of classes I'm teaching and private sessions with people. So give me a call. Thanks a lot, and thank you for listening.